It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go on a Friday live in H-Town. How do you say the name of this town, Griffin?
Huntsville, I want to say.
The other one. The other H-Town. Where the Rockets reside. Where the Astros reside.
Houston.
Yeah, I refuse to say it. Just H-Town. I can't say it. There's no H. I just go Houston. Houston.
Houston.
I'm a Trump devotee. That's my accent from the Northeast. So we're live here at Shell Energy Stadium. I'm really starting to like the soccer stadiums. Of course, this has been two that UNLV has played in. They're playing Sam Houston State tonight. Sam Houston State, you are right, is in Huntsville. I can actually say the H in that case. In Huntsville, which is about an hour away. I was actually told by Q Myers in Texas, don't go anywhere named that has the name Ville. But I don't think he was referencing you or I, Griffin. I think he was referencing other people. But he lived in Waco, so he knows Texas as well as anyone. Today, of course, the show is brought to you by our friends at Treasure Island, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. Make sure you get on down there to watch games tonight, like this game, as UNLV is going to be taking on Sam Houston State at 6:30 our time. Ted Wien's pregame is going to go at 5:30, 55-plus TVs. Great menu. They've tweaked it recently, so still got a lot of the great menus like the Loco Mocos that I love and the chicken salad sandwich and then a brand-new Black Forest BLT. Here's the other cool thing about Treasure Island. At three different bars, including the Golden Circle Sports Bar, they've got a happy hour, $5 beers. Now, you're probably questioning, like, oh, what is it, $5 beers from 4:30 to 4:45? No, it's actually from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. every day. Even weekends. So that makes it exciting on Saturdays and Sundays because you're going to get a cheap beer special down at the Golden Circle Sports Bar. So, yeah, we come out of the gates. We got a lot of college football going on. Griffin, we were actually in the air down here to H-Town with the UNLV football team when Boise had the dream die as the Broncos, the preseason favorite to win the Mountain West Conference, jumped out to a 7-3 lead down in South Florida, and then 27 unanswered. They wound up losing 34-7, and the mocking and the chiding began all over the internet.
We could not help but notice it yesterday on Cofield & Company with Willie Ramirez, Greg Salerno. We were right in the middle of the show. We had the game on. We had to see how those Broncos were doing, and right when we tuned in, my exact words were, this is a shellacking. The offense, I mean, the game, it wasn't like they were blown out immediately in the first, second quarter. It was actually a pretty somewhat reasonable game. And then I believe it was, what, the almost towards the end of the third, right when they got away with that fake punt, converted, and then it seemed like the floodgates just completely opened. Boise didn't have an answer. The offense struggled the entire game. But when it got to that point and they were really pouring it on, the offense just couldn't answer back. So, yeah, man, it looks like Ashton Jeanty, the running back, meant a little bit more than people realize.
Looky here. Oh, how about that? All summer long. Again, not many nuanced takes around the country on the Mountain West Conference. The Mountain West gets treated kind of like college football does overall, where it's just recency bias. So everyone just assuming Boise is going to be Boise because, well, they're Boise, right? Does that make sense? But you're right, Ashton Jeanty, and I kept mentioning over the summer, I'm like, he rushed for over 2,600 yards. Do you realize not only his numbers alone, what a big part of that was for that Boise offense, having Jeanty on the field, what do you think that does for Maddox Mattson? What do you think it does for the wide receivers? What do you think it does for the tight ends? I mean, you know this. You played football, right? When you have to concentrate a defense on one guy who can go for 230 yards a game, it kind of changes the outlook for the other dudes. There's pressure taken off. There's bodies taken away from them in terms of dedication, and it changed everything last night. There's no way Boise wants to go into any game with Maddox Mattson. I think he's a pretty decent quarterback. I also don't think he's the best quarterback in the Mountain West Conference, which, of course, when people voted all Mountain West Conference preseason, they just looked at names. By the way, 9! That just hit me, too. Hallelujah! I'm going to pull back the mic. 9! 9 different Boise players on the preseason All-Mountain West Conference team. UNLV had 2. So anyway, Mattson was the preseason All-Mountain West Conference quarterback. Well, things are going to change for him. Remember last year and the year before when Maddox Mattson gashed the UNL defense at times, like up the gut? Why do you think that was, right? Because there was a lot of attention being put on Ashton Jeanty. And let's get this straight. I'm not dancing on their grave. I think they can bounce back and have a great season. They could still go unbeaten in the Mountain West Conference. They could beat Notre Dame on the road in a few weeks. I think they kind of have to do that now, and then, or they're going to have to lose close and then root for a lot of other group of five teams, group of six now, to lose a bunch. You know, the top contenders, whether it's Memphis, James Madison, Tulane, Navy is up there as a plus 650 choice to make the college football playoff. So Boise's going to need some help from some other people, especially since this one, it wasn't just a road loss. They kind of got boat raced by the final score, 34-7. But, you know, we tried to tell people all summer that Jeanty being gone, and I know how people are going to react to this. Like, oh, duh, of course. You're not saying anything original. Well, I felt like I was the only one saying it over the summer because everyone else was giving them out of West Conference to Boise State. And it's like they lost an unbelievable player, an all-timer in the history of the program. And I'll tell you what, like I look at Sire Gaines, and I'm like, holy crap, this guy is going to be a big-time running back at, you know, 6'1 and 220. He was okay last night, but he just didn't get in a rhythm because they fell behind. He had 9 carries, 44 yards. Malik Sherrod, the transfer from Fresno State, who I think is good, not great. UNLV's defense against Malik Sherrod, for the most part, in meetings against Fresno, really didn't have a lot of trouble with him, right? Not going to play. Actually, they don't play him this year, do they? So not a worry, unless it's in the championship game, which, by the way, Fresno also lost against a good Kansas team. That doesn't mean that Fresno's dead. But bottom line on this is you had a team that you could pretty much count on to rush for 200 yards plus and sometimes 300 yards plus, sometimes 400 yards plus in Boise. And last night they went for 135. Not a bad number, but on 38 carries on 3.6 a carry. So as I said, again, most of the summer, I don't think the rest of the Mountain West Conference stinks. I think it has some balance. I think the teams at the bottom are starting to come up. I think the teams in the middle are going to be better. And Boise, at least last night, showed that the door is open for this to be a competitive conference.
100%. And, you know, we're in this age of college football and pro football as well, where the last few seasons, the running back position really was just undervalued. And it was all, you know, a shift of the, I feel like, collective minds. Everyone thought that football was going towards this air raid, spread it out. Passing is the future. Running game is old school. Well, look what happens when a guy at that caliber at the position of running back, Ashton Jeanty, leaves the team. I mean, you're right, Steve. The running back, having a great running back like that helps every position group on the field. Yeah. But it also just, like, it really, I almost feel like it also determines a team's just mentality on offense. If you have a great running back, you have a great running game, you're going to be, honestly, a lot more aggressive just overall as a team. You have a lot more options. But when you lose that, it's kind of you almost lose your bite a little bit.
I was looking to see the tight end numbers last night, and it didn't look like they turned in too much. And that was one of the great beneficiaries of Ashton Jeanty the last couple of years, being able to suck in the defense and then get the tight end flying up top. And UNLV got victimized by that a couple times in the championship game a few years ago. It's Cofield and Company. We're live here in Houston, Shell Energy Stadium. Nice soccer stadium. This is where the Dynamo play. And I was saying I really like the soccer stadium, so we'll explain that a little more in terms of the aesthetics here in the building. Last year, UNLV was in Kansas City, to take on the Jayhawks, and they played at the MLS Stadium there. Let's do a giveaway. 364-1100, 364-1100. We're going to talk to Mark McMillan in just a couple minutes, break this game down, and also the rest of college football and a lot on the National Football League. But we've got some UNLV-UCLA tickets. A big game coming up. They're hoping to pack the house beyond 40,000. It's on Saturday, September 6th. It is a 5 o'clock kickoff at Allegiant Stadium. You can get your tickets at unlvtickets.com. That's unlvtickets.com. unlvtickets.com is where to go for Rebel tickets against UCLA. We'll take caller 7 right now. 364-1100, 364-1100. Again, caller number 7. We want to talk about the Rebels' defense. So on the way back, the former defensive back in the National Football League, Chef Mark, will break it down for us.
Former NFL cornerback and Next Level Chef contestant Mark McMillan joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
A lot going on in the world of Chef Mark. We got some football to break down here in a couple of minutes, but Mighty Mac comes in on this Friday, one of our football insiders. What's up, Chef?
What's going on, man? We're back. Football Friday is back. College football kicked off last week. UNLV, and we got the big boys starting tonight and this weekend. I can't wait.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Well, let's talk about big boys first in the realm of your world, but not cooking, eating. You are going to have a wing eating contest that you're holding at Ace Hardware over on Green Valley Parkway. Give out the deets.
Yeah, we have a big weekend. It's going to be September 5th through 7th, so they're going to be giving away prizes all for those next 3 days. And they're also, the grand prize is two tickets to the Monday night home opener, Raiders versus Chargers. So they're going to give away two tickets for that as well. We got vendors. We got Naked City Pizza supplying the wings. I think we're going to have almost 160 to 200 wings. And then we got Cofield and Company, Raider Nation Radio. I got Chris Mathias from 8 News Now. And we're going to have a couple of contestants, some fans showing up, pulling their names out of the hat if they want to get in. Have an opportunity to win $500 gift card from Ace Hardware in Henderson, the Valley, at the Green Valley location. So, Steve, you said you was going to come in. Maybe we can get Adam to eat some wings. He's going to have my Grilly McMillan hot sauce on it. And we're just excited, man. $500 gift card for a fan? Come on, you can't pass that up.
That's pretty cool. Yep. So, I'll tell you what, Mark, on this show, because do you have someone official from R&R's morning show?
We don't. We're looking at Vinny, you know, both Vinny's, and then we're looking at Clay Baker. So I think those guys are going to do rock, paper, scissors. But, you know, we'll battle it out, man. You know my loyalty is to Cofield and Company. Come on now, you know. Raider Nation Radio, those are my guys. So, you know, maybe I'll throw a little extra hot sauce on their wings so Cofield can win. So I know your listeners, you got some awesome listeners, man. We definitely appreciate it. I've been getting some feedback from listeners saying they like our segment that we do every Friday. So Cofield and Company listeners out there, show up to Ace Hardware, get your name pulled. Heck, even enter the contest. I'll put somebody in the contest that's listening to the show and have a chance to win that $500 gift card.
So it's Saturday, September 6th. Someone from R&R 920 in the mornings is going to be with the contest, eating in the contest. From our show, Big Adam's not here today for the show, but he won't be here that weekend. He'll be in New England. Greg Salerno, who's the true big fella on the show and brags all the time that he's the ultimate competitor and that he definitely could eat a ton, he can't do it. Griffin is going to be doing a remote at the same time at Whiskey. So I think it might have to be me. And while I did do okay in a donut eating contest, Mark, I don't know that wings are my specialty. I'm still kind of – I'm looking through the rest of the company to try to find somebody.
No, Steve, you got to do it, man. You know, this is – it's Cofield and Company. You got to get in there, man. I want to see some sauce on your face. I want to see meat flying. And I'm going to have somebody there videotaping it. So we're going to have live footage of people eating these wings and goring down the wings. And then, you know, if you do good, we'll put it on social media. But – so bottom line is for a great cause, man. Shout out to Nick and Ace Hardware for allowing us this opportunity. Shout out to Lotus, man, for making this possible as well. So I'm excited, man. Naked City, Chris, my guy at Naked City, we got 160 wings. Steve, how many wings do you think you can eat in like 3 or 4 minutes?
Repeat it one more time.
How many wings do you think you can
eat? Ah, so much drama. So much drama. We do have someone calling in who wants in the contest. Mystery caller, who is this? What's up, pal?
Yo, what's going on?
Wait a second. Is this John Von Tobel?
It is. It is. Okay. It is Jonathan George Von Tobel.
John, did you hear us talking about the Ace Hardware Naked City wing eating contest that Mark is putting on next week?
No, tell me more about this, Steve.
Yes, you have. You were just listening. That's why you called in. It's a wing eating contest. We're going to rep one listener. We're going against other media outlets. So if you win or I win or someone on Cofield & Company wins, then one of our listeners who is assigned to us will get a $500 gift card.
Well, Cofield and Company will win because I will win, because I will be participating and eating the most wings against whatever scrawny schmuck is going to come from other local media.
Oh, this is shocking. This is shocking. I love this. I love this. Interesting. Okay, John, I'm going to let you go because we never trained Griffin to have two callers up at the same time. So I appreciate you calling in. And when I say we, it's not my job to train him. But I'm going to bring in Mark McMillan, and we'll get Mark's reaction to JVT is going to rep the show. JVT is going to rep the show. I will be there, but John is a more voracious eater, and wings are his specialty. So, John, up. That's cool.
Of course. If it's Naked City Wings, anything for them. I'm down to do it. Can't wait for next weekend.
There you go. All right, let's bring in Mark McMillan. We'll get the phones all set. Chef Mark is with us here on a Friday, so he's got his wing eating contest, Ace Hardware. Get out there. We're going to be doing that at noon next Saturday, Green Valley Parkway. Got to be there before noon. We'll pull the names at 11:45. A listener or two will be allowed in, and then it's going to be some media people who are eating wings, and then the winner is going to get a $500 gift card. Chef Mark, you with us? All right, we'll bring in Mark here in just a second. All right, Mark, what's up, buddy?
Oh, man, I thought you hung up on me, man, when I said how many wings you can eat. You're probably like, what? Oh, we got to
I know, right? Yeah, well, how about the timing on that one? I was like, not that many, so I'm going to bring in John Von Tobel because he's going to take over. Yeah, so JVT is going to do it. So he's our rep. So R&R, stop futzing around and get your freaking person named, and I want to know who's doing it from the other outlets, too. Let's go. We got to start handicapping and betting on this thing.
Oh, man, that's going to be pretty cool, man. I don't know who my money is going to be on. I'm going to be judging the competition. You know what, Steve? I might even go get a trophy for the winning team for R&R and Cofield. So whoever wins the wing contest, I'm going to have a chicken wing with the first ever Griller McMillan wing eating contest winner.
I love it.
Who's going to have the trophy? Who's taking on the trophy?
I love it. Let's get into UNLV a little bit. So you were out there. You were watching with me on the sideline as I was going up and down doing my sideline duties. Give me your general read on that victory.
You know, it's tough to really gauge that. That obviously, when you have so many transfers coming in, you never know what you're going to get. First game of the season. Think about college football. You don't get any preseason game to work out the kinks. And Idaho State, I think I said it earlier, man, they came out slinging. They punched them in the mouth. They didn't back down one bit. And, you know, UNLV struggled, especially in the secondary, which I thought was going to be their strong point. And, you know, they really struggled. Obviously, they had some big-time interceptions late in the game. The quarterback made some terrible choices for Idaho State. But hats off to the secondary. They stepped up when they needed to step up, but they gave away too many big-time touchdown passes that you can't, you know, you can't have those kind of mistakes when you're going against, you know, Sam Houston, who, they, you know, is a good team. And then you got UCLA coming in as well. So hopefully they can clean that up and have a better performance tonight. But overall, man, I think I will give those guys a C for that effort.
So let's talk about the run defense. What did you see with the run defense and why Idaho State had so much success?
I just didn't see guys really getting after. Guys couldn't get off the block. I know they talked about how big they are up front, the linebackers, the transfers, but they couldn't get off blocks, and their tackling was atrocious. You know, it was really bad. And like I said, you got a whole week that they prepare for this game that they have. Hopefully it gets a lot better. I think we got spoiled over the last couple of years of seeing the defense really attack, hit guys in the mouth. And that just goes to show you how good that defense was the last couple of years and how instrumental having a Water in the middle who was all over the place for the last couple of years. But hopefully these guys can get it going today and tackle a lot better, because that was really bad tackling as far as the defense side of the ball.
Yeah, new defense, new defense coordinator, new player. So it's going to take a little while for it to come together. But, you know, obviously you don't have time to practice out here in a real game. So it's got to come together tonight against a pretty good running team in San Jose State. The quarterbacks, Calandria, as the Rebels fell behind, got 58 snaps. Orgy got 15. I thought they both looked very good. What do you think is going to happen with the starting quarterback moving forward? And who should be getting most of the time?
That's a good question, man. I think I said on the sports wrap the other day, I named the young guy out of Virginia, I named him White Chocolate, Steve. He's got a little swag in him. And you know, he's got a little speed. He's got a little toughness. And he's got some dog in him. And I like the way he performed. You know, the young guy out of Michigan, you know, he came in late. But I think that opening drive when he had, and, you know, reached the ball over the goal line and fumbled, And they were quick to pull him. And I was, you know, I wasn't shocked, because you can't make those kind of mistakes if you're trying to be QB1. And, you know, we'll see tonight who's going to get the opening nod. Obviously, both of these guys bring a wealth of talent to the table. The running game, as far as the quarterbacks, I think they use their legs well to set up some of the passing games. And also, but, man, the running game was pretty good. You know, they got one of the best running backs in the country. He's been doing that the last couple of years in here at UNLV. And people need to get on notice about that young man, the young train, man. He was running.
Jed Thomas was awesome. The pure speed on the 70-yard touchdown run, man. You better wrap him, or once he gets a couple of steps, he's up to full speed. Did you see that Dan Mullen on the plane before the Rebels left for Houston was checking out the earlier part of the Boise-South Florida game?
You know what? He gets it. And I like this little selfie he took of his phone watching the game. That means coach is locked in. And I'm sure he was probably a little shocked like everybody else. Yeah. I've never seen Boise State get handled like that in a long time. And it was for UNLV fans, I know you guys are like, yeah, you know, we squeaked by Idaho State. But, man, UCF they beat the brakes off of Boise State, man. And like I said, Devon West is wide open, you know, after seeing what Boise State put out there. So, shout out to Coach Mullen, man. He's got a little bit of Lane Kiffin and I'm throwing a little jab and, you know, little selfies on the plane, man. I love it.
All right, you got to tell me in the NFL, what do you think of your former rival, the Cowboys, dealing Micah Parsons?
You know what? We're going to send, as far as Philadelphia Eagles, we're going to send some fruit baskets. We're going to send some lawn chairs. We're going to give Jerry Jones whatever he wants, man. If he needs some makeup, he needs some eye care, he needs some hair plants, we're going to give him whatever he wants, man. We love it. Obviously, you know, Michael, you know how it is, Steve, man. You got to get your money. I know people are like, this guy's been a nuisance. He played the game how the game was supposed to be played. He ended up getting a really good deal and going to a playoff contending team that could possibly, you know, reach the Super Bowl, because they do have a lot of talent. It all depends on how Jordan Love, you know, and those receivers work down there in Green Bay. But, man, we love it in Dallas. You know, as Eagles fans, we hope Jerry lives till he's 200 years old so he can continue to make moves like this and the Eagles can keep winning.
Chef Mark McMillan is with us. Have you been watching the Cowboys Netflix documentary, America's Team, The Gambler and His Cowboys?
You know what? I haven't watched it. I know my son sent me a screenshot. I guess the opening has me on there when I think it's Irvin or Harper catching the ball on top of my head. I had to send my son the replay of the play that he did not catch that ball. So my son was like, man, Dad, my phone's blowing up. Everybody's saying my dad got moss on TV. But I haven't found myself to watch it. I just don't like the Cowboys.
Dude, you got to watch it, though. Because there's a lot of things that, you know, when you were playing, you probably didn't even know all the drama that was going on. There's a moment I wanted to ask you about. So in the 95 season, they're trying to win their third out of fourth, but it's Barry Switzer as the coach, and Troy Aikman hates him. And, you know, Switzer claims that Troy Aikman's a racist. So there's, like, all this heat. They go into Philly, and I was trying to see if you were on the field, but they go into Philly, and there was a key fourth down play where they tried to run Emmett on fourth and one. And they ran him once, and I think the play started too early, so they gave him a second chance. They ran the same exact play, and he got jammed again. So he got stopped twice by the Eagles. And afterwards, you guys won the game. Afterwards, everyone's like, Barry Switzer's a moron. Do you remember that game?
Yes, I remember that game. And a lot of people don't know how we got to that fourth and one. I tackled Fleming, I think his name was. I tackled him 1 yard short of the first down. It was 2 yards short. If you look at the replay, the referee puts the ball up an extra yard, and me and Mike Zordes was in the referee. We said a lot of things I can't say on the radio, but we were in his face, man. In that game, Cowboys were talking so much trash. We didn't start off good in the first half. You know, we had the number one defense going into that game, and you know, it was just a lack of respect. And Ray Rose, man, he was so fired up in that locker room before we played him. He didn't like Barry Switzer. The Cowboys didn't like us. And he was just basically saying, man, these guys just came into our household in the first half, bent us over with no Vaseline, and what are we going to do about it? So that second half, we went out and did something about it.
Nice job. Yeah, jammed him real hard. And then Switzer heard it for a while, and then, well, it turned out they went through the rest of that season and got a Super Bowl. All right, I got to close on this one. Chef Mark is with us, Mark McMillan. Your social media food porn update of the week. This week, I see you making a crawfish three ways pie.
Oh, yeah. I did a crawfish pie. And then I did a crawfish stuffed croissant crawfish roll. And then I made crawfish etouffee. So I made three different dishes out of my crawfish dishes that I made the other day. So it came out really good, delicious flavors. Yeah, sauteed onions, bell peppers, celery, a little flour to kind of thicken up the roux. Then you add your crawfish tails, a little bit of dash of a little chicken broth. Stir a little heavy whipping cream to kind of thicken that sauce up. Oh man, come on! I might have you a piece in a minute once we get off the phone, man. Heat me up a piece of that pie, baby.
I reminded you, and then you made yourself hungry.
I know. I started going over the rim. Now I got some wings marinating right now, so I'll probably fire those up this weekend for the big game, Alabama, Florida State. You got LSU, you got Clemson, you got Dabo going back into the Death Valley. So it's going to be exciting. But first, we got UNLV. They got to take care of business tonight.
There you go, Mark. Thanks, Chef. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, baby. Let's get them wings, baby. Come on, Cofield.
Chef Mark McMillan, wing eating contest next week, Ace Hardware, Saturday before the UCLA game. It's a noon start. Listeners can qualify to get in. You just got to show up by 11:45. Again, Green Valley Parkway, Ace Hardware is the site for Mark McMillan's wing eating contest. This part of the show is brought to you by our buddies at William Hill. Got to get in the pro pick'em. You got to do it soon because the season's going to kick off next week. But $25 entry fee gets you in the action for all 18 weeks of the regular season. All you got to do is pick the winning teams. No point spreads, $1.2 million in cash prizes. There's $1 million bonus if you get 215 wins or more on the season. Get in today. Don't forget, at all the full-service Nevada William Hill sportsbooks, the NFL Progressive cards are out. $5 card can get you up to $50,000. And the way to make this all easy is to get a William Hill Nevada mobile sportsbook, the app. Your first bet will be matched up to a $250 bonus on that first wager if you bet the $250. It's William Hill here on Friday.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Griffin back in our Finley Toyota Studios. Cofield on the road in H-Town Shell Energy Stadium. I think I'm going to stop doing free pops for gas companies, right? Yeah. Caleb Herring's here with us. He approves of that as he's in to break down some UNLV football. Also, I know he's got a lot to say about the Micah Parsons trade because I sat at lunch today, which we probably have to do a impromptu broadcaster bites here in a second. But I sat at lunch and listened to you talk about Micah Parsons for like 10 minutes, and I could not disagree with you more vehemently, but I didn't say a damn thing. And
I didn't know you were
– could you?
I could see it in your face.
I looked over. I was like – I was holding it in. Sometimes I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do it on the air. Okay, but first, let's get to this game tonight because you got 1-0 UNLV against the Sam Houston State team that lost last week, but against a pretty good Western Kentucky team. Both teams, both squads had some defensive liabilities. They had some issues. UNLV gave up 555. Sam Houston State allowed 401 in the air. Let's talk about the Rebels' defense, and let's start with the run game and what it allowed. And I think a lot of people are like, the scheme wasn't the right scheme. But you don't necessarily agree with that in terms of stopping the run last week.
No, I don't agree with that. I think the aim was to commit to the pass attack, which they had every reason to. Idaho State, as an FCS school, was the number one passing offense in all of FCS in 2023. They fell off last season because their quarterback had an injury and wasn't able to play the full season, but they knew coming in that the pass attack was the primary source of offense for the Bengals. And I think that the initial thought was, we're going to approach this game as if the pass is everything to them. And give credit to the Bengals, their counterattack was, we're going to make you respect the run. And they did that with some unconventional things. One for me that stood out was the spacing on the offensive line. You kind of wondered how UNLV defensively was getting so gashed. They essentially used formations, whether it was the receivers lining up outside the numbers and or the offensive line themselves having two-foot splits, just creating that natural space at the start of a play. And with that, they created gaps and situations where they could split the defense. And UNLV clearly adjusted to formation. A lot of times their 4-2 front end up looking more like a 4-1. The Bengals offensive line used the delayed handoffs and draw plays to sort of create leverage in situations where they just out-leveraged UNLV defensively. And those are the big gashy runs. I think that was the shock of the game to everybody coming in. Week zero, don't really know what the game plan is going to be for either opponent. And I think that caught UNLV a little bit off guard. The fact that they were able to consistently gash the defense with those rush attempts kept balance in the game. And then, again, credit to the Bengals for an elite effort that they put out. You could say that maybe they are just that good in the skill set, but they had some plays that were 50-50, and they won them. And unacceptable. You're not going to make excuses for DBs in coverage, but give them all the credit in terms of the plays that they were able to make in the passing game to keep themselves with a puncher's chance. And we talked about it in the pregame. Because they have a good passing attack, they have a puncher's chance against anybody. And they executed at a high level in the passing game, and UNLV has some things to sew up. They learned a lot, let's say that, about their defense. They got to figure some things out in the short week and see if they can get it corrected for week two.
Well, let's talk about the linebackers in run defense, because Marcel McDuffie has been out there for years, but they've got a new starting linebacker, and you noticed something with both of those guys.
Yeah, I noticed the tempo is a little different, and sometimes tempo is great. You like to hit the hole and run through walls, and you like when linebackers are able to do that and cut it loose at the second level. But sometimes patience is just as much as a virtue with linebackers as it is with running backs. And I think what we're seeing is an eagerness to pursue. This is a reminder to everybody that Blessing Aluwalu Tuiolamotu is starting for the first time this year and really getting the first serious reps of his career as a Rebel. He's been around the program, like you mentioned, with Marcel McDuffie for a couple of years now, but he's been more of a project developing in the system with linebacker. So he, as a linebacker, will learn the patience and pace of play that's required. Yeah, you want to go 100 miles an hour, but especially against teams that run inside zones and delayed hands off, patience is key. If you can run yourself right out of position, I think that happened several times throughout the game. And also one of the elements with Marcel McDuffie, he's playing front side more often than he is playing backside, which is a different pace for him as well. Also, he's had the added responsibility of being the vocal leader. And for the last two seasons, he was able to kind of be the quiet lead-by-example guy while Jackson Woodard and others took the vocal responsibilities, whether it be getting the team lined up pre-snap, communicating motions and things like that. That's something that he had to think about in-game situation for the first time. So there was a little bit of hesitation, maybe a pause in his step, especially in the early going. But I think the linebacker corps has the talent. They've got guys down the depth chart that came in and played as well. Justin Flo being one of those guys who I think is a weapon as far as his physicality. Maybe the style of that offense didn't fit his niche that well, but excited to see what he looks like once he cuts it loose and gets more familiar with the playbook. But learning experience for these guys who are getting considerable reps like Blessing, to see how his motor runs and the energy he can bring, I think that's exciting. He was in the backfield making some disruption, and then just honing it in and knowing when to put the pedal to the metal and when to ease off a little bit.
Yeah, Blessing ranked seventh by PFF on the defense for UNLV. He and McDuffie were actually the number one and two tacklers. Flo only got in there for 11 plays, but he was actually the highest rated player against the run, and I think that's going to be his specialty. Before we go to break, I got a minute here. Trey Fulton was a surprise participant on a lot of plays, like 60 plays out of 79. He's a young guy. I mean, he's got the frame. He's got this long frame at 6'4", you know, whatever he is, about 190 pounds. He got beat for a couple of catches, but I know you watched back when you were watching the tape, and you're like, that was a pretty good game.
Yeah, it was a pretty good game for him, and I think he got a lot more reps, maybe unexpectedly because of the matchups. They had a 6'6 wide receiver out there who made a lot of jump ball catches and catches in traffic, and I think they wanted to kind of have him be the answer in a lock situation there. And he fared well. He was decent with his coverage, and like you said, a couple of plays just didn't go his way. But he had a competitive camp. The DB room really had a competitive camp in trying to figure out who would be those guys, and that's why a lot of people thought coming into the season that that would be the strength of the defense. And Fulton, I think, got a lot better during that competition. He earned the right to be out on the field and obviously earned a lot of trust from his secondary coaches to put him out there in a matchup with a guy who was winning the 50-50 game a lot. So we'll see if that continues based on matchups, but excited to see how he grows. And with that length and that frame, he could be a problem for quarterbacks trying to throw over the top.
October 17th and 18th, Shane Gillis is back at the Resorts World Theater. You can grab your tickets at AXS.com, AXS.com. Shane Gillis, we got two tickets right now. Griffin's got them for October 17th or 18th. 364-1100, 364-1100, caller number 7. We'll get into Caleb's full-throated defense of what the Cowboys did yesterday with moving on Micah Parsons. I don't agree.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Lordy, I hate what happened yesterday for Cowboys fans. I don't like you Cowboy fans, but I can have a little empathy. I slugged this part of the show. Jerry's final move. He trades Micah Parsons. I'm not suggesting that Jerry's going to die now.
Yeah, you are.
No. But that's his final move with Micah Parsons. And I've seen people hash it out for the last day or so. I think a lot of people try to embrace debate, try to come up with some sort of alternative take on this. I think it's a terrible move. I have zero faith that the Jones boys can draft anyone close to Micah Parsons. When you get someone like that, you pay them. I don't believe Jerry Jones at all that this trade helps them become more competitive when. And the other part of it is he's 82 years old. I've never seen, rarely, have I seen an 82-year-old owner who's like, you know what, let's build for the future. Like, what? But I, you know what, ultimately, I don't think that's why he did this. I think it was just an ego thing, and he didn't want to deal with the agent, Micah, so he moved on him.
I think that has pretty been, it's been pretty consistent for Jerry in terms of the personal thing about not dealing with a third party. I will give him that. It's been a consistent as a businessman. He likes to do the good old boy handshake brand of business and deal making. So I will give him that for consistency. I do think it's a difficult decision, and there's a lot because of the nature of his negotiating that maybe we will never know the real story about. And you know, ironic timing that this Cowboy documentary has swept the nation. It's been all the rave because you got to see that, like an inside look at kind of how Jerry operates when it comes to negotiations and things like that. Fantastic series, by the way, for those who haven't seen it. I won't spoil it today. But no, I think it's an interesting move because clearly it got to a point during the summer where Micah Parsons made a decision that he didn't want to be a Cowboy anymore. And I think that became clear, and whatever his reasoning for that, Jerry probably number one among those things, it led to an impossible rift. Even if Jerry fully cooperated, I think, at the end of this, I don't think it ends amicably for either of them. The ironic thing for me is that there's deals across the league where people were holding out that ended up getting done in the days leading up to the Parsons trade, and you kind of thought that, like people anticipated, Micah Parsons would just be a late domino to fall, and they figure it out. So that made it a little bit more shocking. Then the fact that he lands with the Packers as a Packer fan was very exciting. And I didn't want to get too excited about the rumor swirling earlier in the week. I was talking to Griff, who's a Bears fan. We'll forgive him for that. About the possibility of the Packers landing him. And sure enough, here we are. The Packers have landed Micah Parsons, added edge rush, a second edge rusher really to their defense. And I think it helps the Packers in a big way for this immediate season. They got a young defense. They lost what some would consider a lockdown corner in Jaire Alexander over the offseason. So how do you help your secondary? You get pressure on the quarterback. And that's what Micah Parsons can provide. So in all, I think it's a win-win situation. I like that the Packers
win-win.
Got Parsons. Yeah.
Caleb Herring is here. We're in the press box getting ready for the UNLV game in Houston. Okay. How is it a win for Dallas?
I think it's a win if, and this is a big if. You alluded to it earlier. If they can turn those two picks into good roster pieces, I think that helps the defense. I don't think Micah Parsons, while he's a game breaker in the pass game, I don't think Micah Parsons affects all of the game enough to throw all of your chips in with him. If you have other pieces around, maybe to help you stop the run, for instance, if you're the Cowboys, because that was where their defense really struggled last season, if you can get that done with multiple pieces as opposed to throwing all your chips in with Micah Parsons, who is a fantastic player, don't get me wrong, but I don't think you pay anybody the kind of money he's getting for just edge rush. If you need a defensive system, a structure to stop both the run and pass, Micah Parsons doesn't get it, and the value there, you're not allowed to build. Now they got two first-round picks. Can you turn that into something? And then they also got a quality player who does affect the run game. He did a great job with Green Bay with Clark. He did a great job in the middle. He's a big boy. He commands a double team at times, so I think he can help anchor the defensive line, which is one of the issues against the run. But it's yet to be determined. The Cowboys won't know, and Cam Newton made the point earlier today, the Cowboys won't know for a couple of years if it really was worth it, which, to your point, Jerry doesn't really have that much time. When you think about just life and taking his course, who knows what happens in the next couple of years with Jerry Jones and the family. So I do think there's a chance that it can be a win-win situation. But the pressure's on Dallas now to make something of those picks and maybe even do something with the extra cap space they have for this season. I don't know who's available in free agency to go pick up. But we'll see what they do with it. I think right now it's not as lopsided a trade as initially thought because of the name of Michael Parsons.
Well, let's address one, the extra cap space. Jerry Jones has been unwilling to pull the trigger the last couple of years on free agents. What's going to change? Now a sense of urgency?
I think now if we're...
Like, I have the money. Like, he's had the money. There is really no salary cap for the good organization in football. Now, here's the thing. They're not a good organization. So while the Chiefs and the Rams are like, F the cap, I don't think the Cowboys can manage it. So I don't – is he going to get back into the – I mean, it is crazy that America's Game documentary, like you forget at the end of the, what, 94 season when San Fran got by Dallas and Deion Sanders was the key, and then Deion goes to free agency and Jerry's like, I'm going to do everything I can to get Deion Sanders. That Jerry Jones is gone. Where is the competitive, I will spend anything to win Jerry Jones?
What I think, there's a long shot for this, but I think the mentality of Jerry Jones will change because it's personal. And I think that's probably the only hope for the Cowboys to get him off his butt and make him do something is the fact that now it's personal and he has something to prove to somebody. Micah Parsons, much like Jim Johnson, if you're going back and reflecting on Cowboy history, is being valued as the reason the Cowboys would have succeeded this year. And now Jerry's like, no, I didn't need him, just like I didn't need Jim Johnson. There's 500 other edge rushers that I can go get that can do what he was doing for our team, and we could go win without him. Maybe that's what sparks him to go out and make some aggressive moves in the offseason and actually spend some of the money that he has. But you're right, he does have a history of not doing it, and as recently as Derrick Henry being right there for the taking and allowing that offseason to go without even making the call. If he's that Jerry Jones, yeah, the Cowboys are cooked. But I do think that the extra personal motivation now that Jerry's clearly invested, he went and had a sit down with Stephen A and all those things. I think he's in prove a point mode as Jerry Jones, the aggressive owner, GM, and president of football operations.
Watch how many times we got less than a minute left. Watch how many times people are going to say, okay, Dallas is now going to make a run at a top 10 quarterback. Okay. So one, how do they do that with a pick coming up and a future pick with the Packers? That's probably going to be in the 20s. Secondly, that means you have to clear the decks of Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott, his cap hit next year and the year after is $72 million and $68 million. If I'm going to trade for Dak Prescott, and I would have an interest in trading for him, you know what I want, Jerry? I'll take Dak Prescott. I'll give you a sixth conditional to a fifth. You're going to be a second back with Dak. You have to pay me to take Dak. That's, I mean, that contract's unbelievable.
It is.
$72 and $68 million? Then that's the problem with this whole thing. You already went down this path of paying your stars. You got to keep paying them. You can't just have your ego fly out of control and go, you know what, I'm out.
Yeah,
you can't be out.
The only hope is, like you said, to get a young quarterback, to get a good quarterback, you have to be in the top five picks, essentially. If you're aiming for Arch Manning, good luck. I don't think you're going to get anywhere near that with your 220 or greater first-round picks to trade with. There's a lot of issues with the formula right now with the Cowboys. One of the things is you just hope Dak performs. If Dak performs to that contract, and I think you got CeeDee Lamb locked up for a while, you got a quality receiver in Pickens. If you can play keep up with offenses, I think you have a chance. Just you want to get in the playoffs and see what happens. But I think Dak's good enough to keep around for the rebuild.